Welcome to the Iyun Podcast, an in-depth look at Haredi society, Israel, and the Jewish people. I am your host, Ari Koretsky, and I invite you to join us as we confront the challenges, joys, and possibilities of Torah-centered living in an evolving world. The Iyun Podcast. Think again. Welcome back, friends, to the Iyun Podcast, here with our second episode. And we now begin to really dive into the topic of Haredim in the army, the relationship of the Haredi society to the Israel Defense Forces from many, many different angles. We're going to be tackling this over the next number of weeks, number of episodes, in terms of the practical realities, demographic needs, what is the actual mitzias, the on-the-ground situation with respect to religious activity in the army, some of the options that currently exist and that could be expanded and scaled, such as Nachal Haredi or Netzach Yehuda, Haredi Hesder program. We're going to be interviewing the key players in all of these different movements and programs. We're going to deal, of course, on its own with perhaps the thorniest and most difficult of all the aspects of this question, and that is the moral question, the notion of equality, or perhaps the notion of brotherhood, as Rabbi Pfeffer might recast it, a new way Haredi may think about themselves within the broader context, the tapestry of Israeli society. This episode, we are featuring our Iyun founder and director, Rabbi Yehoshua Pfeffer, but also a new guest, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Simchon, who has a fascinating background of his own, as well as a really unique lens into the Haredi perspective on army service, as we discuss here the importance of this conversation vis-a-vis this largely growing demographic, the Haredi society, and this incredibly vital and central institution to the state of Israel and the people of Israel, the Israeli army, Tzahal, Tzva Hagana Lisrael. So Rabbi Simchon, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you ended up in this part of the world.
Right. Thank you very much for inviting me. I was born in Tzfat, learning in a few sorts of educations, communities. I learned in Satmar in Tzfat, and I learned in the Sfardi school in Tzfat. And I got both of the Ashpaot influence from both of the sides.
Sounds like a confusing childhood.
Yeah. Didn't stop. We carry on. I learned in Yeshiva Ketana in Slobodka in Bnei Brak. And then I went to Gated for a few years, got married in England. And Baruch Hashem, we came back to Eretz Israel after 7 years in Gated. I learned in Koilel and I did my Rabbanut in Gated and here in Eretz Israel. And Baruch Hashem, after a few years, I went to the university to start to learn law. I end up my first degree in law at 2014. And then after 7 years of volunteering in prisons as rehabilitations of prisoners.
Like a chaplaincy?
Yeah.
Like a prison rabbi, basically.
Yeah. Well, no. It's not a prison rabbi, it's a volunteer that you come in every morning at 7:30 and you leave the prison at 1:30 and to make the prisoners have some sort of Jewish life and Jewish new schedule, and to try to see how I can feed them into good deed in a very positive asiya. Indeed, in the Jewish and Israeli communities. And Baruch Hashem, after 7 years, I went to do my practice by a judge. And she said that the first condition that I can be accepted is that I will stop to volunteering in prisons.
Why is this?
Because she was scared that it's going to be
some conflict of interest.
So I took it too serious, and then I took my prisoners into Zaka, and Magen David Adom. And Baruch Hashem, I have loads of prisoners that's left the old way and they came into this new way of volunteering in the police as Zaka and in Magen David Adom.
Beautiful.
What life support.
What made you want to go into law or any academic degree? We spoke about this with Rabbi Pfeffer on a previous episode about how he made that choice to leave the wonderful, you know, enclosed walls of the Beis Medrash and full-time learning and to go and to do this degree. Was there a particular moment or a particular factor that triggered you to go and achieve a degree?
As a Rav in a small community near Netanya, I saw that I missed something in being part of the Israeli community in Eretz Israel, in Medinat Israel. And I asked for 20 years the army to cancel my ptor, or I got in the age of 20.
They cancel the exemption.
Yep.
I got in the age of 22 when I came back from England, 23 actually. And for 20 years, I got no.
Why?
They say there's no such an such a thing to cancel your ptor. It's not such a thing. It's once you got a ptor, you can't go into the army. And after that, 20 years later, I got a phone call once I came out of the Knesset, as I'm working as the in charge of the government communications in the Misrad HaPnim, the Office of Interior. And they asked me if I'm available for a small talk. And I said, yes. And then he said that a psychologist from the army wants to talk to me. He called me and said, what are you doing today? I told him about my deed. And he said, so who gave you a ptor? Tomorrow morning, you need to be... I'm canceling your ptor right now. And tomorrow morning, you need to be in the back room. You need to be in the army base in Tel HaShomer.
How old were you at this time?
41.
Wow. And normally, Miluim even finishes at 40.
Yeah. 41, I went 3 days later. I started actually my Shlav Bet. And I went for 3 weeks being in the army. It wasn't so easy because of my job, because of my second job as being a head of the academic department in the University of Tel Aviv.
So you were working at this time in University of Tel Aviv?
I had two jobs.
Two jobs. And in the Knesset as
and
well?
In Misrad HaPnim.
Misrad HaPnim.
Misrad HaPnim.
So you were doing legal work in Misrad HaPnim, like as a lawyer?
No. As a communication person. Communications, to do the communication between the government and the Knesset, I mean, Misrad HaPnim and the Knesset, the city councils, 260 city councils in Israel, and Misrad HaPnim, and the other side from Misrad HaPnim to the 260 city councils around.
And you were also a Rav still, or that you had stopped?
I'm still being a Rav. I'm still being a Rav, giving shiurim every Monday in Tzoran and every Friday in Netanya and Shabbos, of course. And then I start my army service, and after finishing the 3 weeks of training, I got into Pikud HaOref, that is the...
Home Front Command.
Home Front Command. And my my partner in the police for special tasks, he was very high commander in Pikud HaOref, and he took me to be a general of the Haredim in Haifa as being a Haredi and Pikud HaOref, and to understand the same language. In the last summer, I started Kurs Ktsinim, being a major, and I end up as a seren. I don't know exactly the how you translate
the ranking system
in England.
Yeah. I'm not sure either.
In England and America, it's different. Yeah. They have different different names for each degree. And I got my CERN, and I started on Motzei Shabbat of Simchat Torah, and we are now going into this into this war.
Okay, I want to stop there for a minute. First of all, I want to get to Rabbi Pfeffer. Why were you trying to cancel your patur for so many years?
I wanted to be part of the community. I understand that I felt that something is missing by understanding the other side. I understand the Haredim. I grew up there, but I didn't understand the other side. I wanted to understand the other chavayot and to understand other language of a different community that we live together. We are in the same neighborhood, but we don't talk the same language. We don't feel the same feeling from being part of the Israeli folk here in Eretz Israel. And I wanted to understand the other side, and I wanted to feel the other side. And that's why I wanted to go to the army. Because I understand that is something that everybody needs to do to become part of the big story of Eretz Israel.
Rabbi Yeshua, we want to talk on this episode about the most common objections to Haredim participation in the army. And I think what is clear is that, you know, the vast majority of members of the Haredi society are not doing what Rabbi Yosef Chaim has done. And for the most part, they're trying very hard to get dichuyim, to get the deferrals, and to get peturim, to get permanent exemptions, I guess they would be called. And there's a reason for that. And there's a reason for that, many reasons for that, probably at large. And I want to hear Rabbi Yosef Chaim's experience in the army, but I want to hear about it as a response to what the most common objections are. Why are people not going? What's blocking people? And I guess there are, of course, probably global issues like sense of identity. And then there are specific issues, particular conflicts that they will encounter in the service that would directly contradict their either religious beliefs, values, practices, and so forth. Can you sort of catalog for us what the most common objections or concerns would be?
Yeah, thank you, Rari. So first of all, it's just important to realize this is a very complex, very complicated story. Very hard to encompass it in a short time as we have today. But let me give you just a very brief understanding of what's going on over here, of the tensions around the issue of army service. So, you know, back in 1948, in the 50s and the 60s, and in those years, so there was still a much more nuanced relationship between Haredi society and the army. It was much more normal to do army service. It was common, in fact, for Haredi people to do army service if they were not in full-time learning. If you're in full-time learning, there was a special exemption or a deferral year by year for those who are in full-time learning, because this was the initial petition to Ben-Gurion, please allow, from Rav Maimon and from other Rabbanim, please allow those who are engaged in full-time Torah study to refrain from army service in order to rebuild the decimated, the destroyed Torah world from after the Shoah, from after the Holocaust. That was the initial raison d'etre for giving this exemption. And those who didn't take advantage of the opportunity to be in full-time Torah study, they generally did army service. And there was something called the old Nachal Haredi. Now there's a new Nachal Haredi, but there was an old Nachal Haredi, which wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like, oh, this is so special, Haredim are doing army service. It was something that was fairly normal. Many people did it. Over time, however, the general framing of Haredi society in Israel became much stronger in terms of the isolationist impulse. It took time for that to kick in. In the beginning, it was pretty mixed. There was a new yeshuv, it was in Tel Aviv, moved to Bnei Brak, it was in other places around the country. There was a lot more mixing between the Haredi and non-Haredi societies within Israel, both in terms of geography and in terms of day-to-day life.
And just because you mentioned the new yeshuv, I want to just jump in, because that implies there was an old yeshuv. And I think when we talk about the old yeshuv, we generally think about the Yerushalmi Jews, and that probably was a more oppositional stance towards the state or towards the army itself. Is that, would that be accurate?
Yeah, you say when we speak about the old Yishuv, generally speaking, we don't speak about the old Yishuv. It's less interesting for these conversations because the old Yishuv is anti-Zionist, Edah Haredit, other very extremist types of groups, whether it's Tolda Saron, whether it's Neseri Karata, these more extremist anti-Zionist, we were here before the state, we don't want to have anything to do with the state. We're not going to take money from the state. We're not going to participate in the politics of the state of Israel. We get funding from abroad, from Satma and from other groups. So we don't speak so much about the old Yishuv because it's less interesting for these conversations. It's also a very small part.
Do we have a sense of what percentage terms, roughly speaking, that general, you know, grouping of old Yishuv descendants, so to speak, would be vis-a-vis the larger Haredi population?
So I don't have numbers. I would imagine it's something like 5%.
Wow. Okay, so really, really inconsequential in that regard.
I wouldn't call it inconsequential because they make noise.
Right.
But they're not a large part of broadly writ Haredi society. Haredi society has, you know, the Litvish, Hasidish, and the Sfardi groups. These are huge. And the old Yishuv is relatively small. It's in Me'ah Sha'arim. It's focused in Yerushalayim. Has some satellites in Beit Shemesh and in other places in Israel, but it's still very small. Anyway, getting back to the big story, which is the new Yishuv. So the strong isolationism kicked in when it became bigger, stronger, when the politics became stronger. The era of Rav Shach, you know, and a little bit before that already, began to be characterized by strong isolationism. And that strong isolationism carried on beginnings that were already there from the time of the Chazon Ish, but strengthened them much more. That strengthening was in one element, one part of that strengthening was in terms of army service. And it became almost obvious, taken for granted, that somebody growing up in Haredi society doesn't do army service, whether he's learning or he isn't. In the time of Rav Shach still used to say, somebody who's not learning and doesn't do army service, he's not okay. He's a roedef of Olam HaTorah because he gives a bad name to Olam HaTorah. He's not learning and he's not doing army service. However, the situation, the facts on the ground became that if you're Haredi, you don't do army service. And there's several reasons that justify this. You can look at these as post-factum justifications, or you can say that they're ex-ante reasons. Either way, I'll give you a short listing of them, but I think there's one main reason, but let me give you a short listing of them. One reason is, of course, because of Torah study. We want our youth to be engaged in full-time Torah study for as long as possible, and these are formative years. These are years in which you're forming your character. You're honing who you are, your identity. And if that identity is formed around Torah, it's going to be different from an identity formed around army service. It's true that in the Datulumi world, there's a Hesda concept where you can do both. The Haredim said, we don't want to do both. We want to engage in Torah study, and our youth should go through those formative years in Torah study. Now, that's on the one hand, a formative idea. And then you could say, well, somebody who's not cut out for learning, he's not going to be doing that because he's not learning anyway. But there's also a negative aspect. If you're in the army, then you are exposed to everything Israeli. You're a part of Israel. You're under the command of non-Haredi and often non-Frum commanders. And you will be part of the Israeli machinery rather than the Haredi sociological machinery. And that's a big deal. We want our kids to be a part of us. You know, it's a them and us kind of thinking. There's an us over here and the Haredi, we want them to keep them close. We want to keep the kids close and not under a different kind of auspices, commander, network and hierarchy and so on. And that's both because of the identity issue. We want them to remain here close by, but also because of the question of just isolating, right? We're worried about the dangers of what you might be exposed to in the army. The army is a very coarse place. It's not an easy place to be. It's a place where you get exposed to all kinds of things, secular, Israeli, Zionist, and so on. It's a place that has a strong educational core. Don't forget, Ben-Gurion's army vision wasn't just to defend the state of Israel, but also to have a melting pot to create the new Jew. And that new Jew was very different from the model that the Haredi Jew wanted to emulate, to continue what there was in Europe. And that was a big deal. We didn't want the kids to go to the army and to become part of the project of the new Jew and to abandon the old Jew project that the Haredi society was trying to perpetuate. So that's a big deal too. However, all of these might be, you know, potentially solvable. Maybe we could set up a Haredi battalion. There is one, Netzach Yehuda, maybe a Haredi brigade. Maybe there's other options to
slightly older age of conscription potentially.
I mean, the other way, right? You don't have to be 42. You can be a little bit older, right? There are potential solutions, but you know, one has to realize the underlying issue here, and that is that a young guy, okay, I give rides to young yeshiva guys of yeshiva age who are not necessarily cut out for learning. They're not investing now their time in learning. And I ask them, why are you not in the army? You know, your non-Haredi period in the army, don't you feel that responsibility? And the answer is, you know what? We never thought about it. It's not part of our world. It's developed in a way that you have two kind of systems, the Haredi system and the non-Haredi system. And these are separate paths. And to be fair, the army has never really wanted the Haredim to be very integrated. It's a big headache to integrate Haredim. The politics was always very complicated. The Haredi politicians stand to gain nothing by pushing for Haredi integration. And the non-Haredi politics also stand to gain nothing because they make enemies with the Haredim. And you always need Haredim to be a part of the coalition to form the tipping point of governments. So nobody had a political or army-oriented interest. The understanding before Simchas Torah, before October 7th, was small army, technologically advanced. We don't really need the Haredim. It's a moral issue, an equality issue, a social issue, but it's less of an army issue. And therefore, we have people like Rav Simchon, who at a later age says, you know, I want to be a part of this. I want to understand what's going on. We're a part of Israel. But most Haredi individuals, certainly not at young ages, they don't feel that way. They feel, we're Haredi, we don't do army, because that's just the way it is. When one of a very famous speaker, Rav Neugershal, famous Haredi, some will say Haredi apologist, Haredi speaker, however you want, a very talented person. He once spoke in front of a non-religious audience, and he knew that the army issue was going to come up. And he consulted with Rav Shach, what do I say? Why don't we do army service? How do I justify this? What do I say? Rav Shach told him, you should say, because the rabbi said. And that's what he said. And he said, it went down well. And you know what? That's probably the best he could do. Because to try to explain it, it's so complicated. On a moral level, you know, what's going on? They're defending us.
And we'll get to the moral level in a separate episode. Absolutely, yes.
So these are the basic, if you want, underlying reason. Rav Simchon, do you want to add something?
Well, I want to ask Rav Simchon, you know, hearing this catalog of issues, how much do you relate to them, you know, in terms of the actual experience you had? And I want to hear about your experience and your personal experience, and also what you've seen from your perch for those others, maybe younger, you know, Haredim or other Haredim from your vantage point, from your perspective, who have been in the army. Do you see them also dealing with these
Just
issues?
Just don't forget, Ravari, that for an 18-year-old, we're talking about 3 years army service. Rav Simchon did, was the original service of 3 weeks, and then, of course, you do reserve duty.
Right.
But, so we need perspective both on your experience, but also on what do we think about how this would look for an 18-year-old.
Fair modification. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your experience and what you've seen and what you've experienced in terms of your own, in terms of these issues.
So I will start with just describing the who did this Shlav Bet together with me, who did this 3 weeks
and
short,
explain just what is Shlav Bet. What is Shlav Bet?
Shlav Bet is it's a second option for someone that didn't do army in the age of 18, 20. So it gives you a second opportunity to be part of the army.
Is it all Haredim?
Yeah. But not only that they were only Haredim, together with me it was two Rosh Yeshivas. One is Hasidic Rosh Yeshiva, and one is a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, a Rov of a community of Tel Aviv, a Litvish rabbi from Tel Aviv, a doctor from Hasidut Gur, a Ger Chosid, that is, he's now in Gaza. I can say his name, Dr. Sabiner, and he did the Shlav Bet together with us, and today he's a doctor in 669, and he's serving in Gaza in these days. And another lot of people that have a lot of asiyah, a lot of doing things in the Jewish community and in Haredi community. And we all talked about this, that it's too late and it's too short. Mm. It's too late to start at the age of 40. And we all was in the same, more or less the same age. It's too short. And it felt that it's not real. But I can say that whoever wanted to do this shlichut, to do this communication with the Israeli community and to do the communication with the army and carried on the service, the duty, felt that he did just the start in these 3 weeks, and it was a big change in life. Big change in life, not in living one of the mitzvot Hashem, and not leaving the Esek Torah, what we did before, we carry on with that. And we just added to what we did before, another part of communication with Israelis, with the Medinat Israel, with Am Israel. And I think that is something that we need, as Shlichei Tzibur, we need to pass over. That the army is not only a threat. The army is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for our kids, that's not all of them can manage to sit down 12 or 13 or 14 hours a day of sitting and learning. And by giving them this opportunity to go to the army and to serve Am Israel and to learn Torah, there are parts in the army that you can still sit and learn Torah. If I put my experience in the past 3 months in Shura, in Machane Shura, I could see that people, that every minute that they had spare, they didn't have what to do. They were sitting and learning Daf Yomi. They were sitting and learning other shiurim. And it was so nice to see that our people didn't leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu, didn't leave Torah because they went to the army. And I think if this picture will come out, those yeshivas and the Manhigi Ador will understand that the army is not a threat. You can print and you can make your own, whatever you want, Gedoyel Ador, whatever you want to be in the army, you can put it in.
Did you find that the army was respectful of your needs? Did you find that you had time to do these things? Or in terms of, you know, maybe sort of basket of possible issues that Rabbi Shua didn't mention was, you know, in terms of elevated levels of kashrus, or if you wanted access to a mikvah for a chassidish person, or these kinds of things, are there services available in the way that a Haredi person would want them to be available?
In my short service, I didn't find any, we never had any problems, not of minyanim of shacharit, and not of mincha, and not ma'ariv sometimes in the winter. We never had such a problem. The Hasidic Bochim that wanted a mikveh, they found an opportunity of Tisha Kabim, and they never had a problem with mikveh. And once that we had a problem, they just opened one of the little trolleys that have water in for drinking, and they just pop in for Shabbos before Shabbos.
That's not very hygienic, but okay.
You can find creative solutions.
I'm just thinking about the people drinking that water afterwards. That's all.
Barry, remember COVID? You know what people did to manage to go to mikveh during COVID? So
I actually don't know.
Well, a lot of creative solutions. Okay. So we can find solutions.
Yeah, they found solutions, and they never had a problem. We never had any real conflict by keeping Torah and mitzvot and serving in the army. I can tell you that if I had something that was very hard in this war, it's one evening I came out from Yerushalayim, and I was on uniform. I came after a meeting in the Knesset, and I stopped at the Trempiada, the bus stop, the exit of Yerushalayim. Yeah. And then I asked if anyone needs a lift to Bnei Brak. And it was a younger man with his wife. And he told me, yeah, I need to get to Bnei Brak, but I can't go with you. You know why? because they're not shmira on you on these days, because you're serving in the army, you're with uniform. And that was very, very hard. I saw a lot of very, very complicated situations in this war, but that is was the hardest. To find someone he's not sitting and learning at the moment. He was outside in the Trempiada. He's waiting for a lift to go to Bnei Brak. And to hear from such a person that we haven't got a shmira because we serve Am Israel, that was very hard. I understand that is very, very small percentage of the communities, and where I'm going around in the Sephardi community and in the Litvisha community, in Bnei Brak, in Tanya, there are a lot of appreciations, and I can feel the appreciation of people, of the Frum people, of the Frum community. I can tell you that I was by the Kloisenburger Rebbe on uniform, and he told me, when I asked him for a brocha, he told me, whoever served in Shura,
explain what Shura is.
Shura is the what I call the gate of Gan Eden. That's where we took care of all the kedoshim, chalalim of Tzahal, and the civilians that was killed.
All the bodies were brought there
in Shura. Yeah. And he told me that whoever served in Shura doesn't need my brocha. You can give me a brocha. And you should know that whoever deal with this chesed shel emet will never suffer from that. So he understand what we're doing. And he understand, and I can say by personal message from my father that was also in the army in Milchemet Shlom HaGalil in the Lebanon, and who sent him to the army was the previous Kloisenburger Rebbe. And he told him when he wanted to leave, told him, no, you should stay in the army until they will kick you out. You know why? Because in the army, they should also see how a Jewish person should look like. So he understand the shlichut, he understand what is the importance by being Haredi in the army. And I saw that his son understand the same thing. But the little Rashi Reka, the noises that come from one person here, one person there, we know that it's not the majority, but it's disturbed.
Be sure, when you think about, you mentioned, for to contextualize, that he was talking about an older age and a shorter service. If you're talking about young people, isn't it specifically the ones who are most struggling or least attached to learning that are most vulnerable to this kind of influence in the army? And you talked about all of the being under this command of soldiers or commanders who are not, sensitive to their values necessarily, maybe not specifically insensitive, but are not attuned per se, and all the other challenges. Isn't it almost in a certain way, shouldn't it be the reverse? The ones who are strongest in their connection, in their attachments, could be the ones that are most capable of going out there, serving, and also making that tremendous Kiddush Hashem and that example, transformative power that Rabbi Simchon's father spoke about.
Well, we need to be realistic. And the realistic perspective of what's going on is as follows. I've been involved with an organization called Netzach Yehuda for about a decade. Netzach Yehuda is an organization that services Haredim in the IDF. And the numbers have climbed dramatically. They climbed and then they went down again, and there was a problem with how to count the numbers of Haredim in the army. But irrespective of the numbers, there's a certain profile for the young Haredi individual who is in the IDF today. And that profile is not the very high level of observance, the coming in with strong ideals of contributing, of bringing Kedusha into the IDF. That's not where they're coming from. They're falling into the army because they're losing their footing in other institutions within the Haredi space, and they're falling into the IDF, often children of Bali Tshuva. There's a certain profile which would define or categorize who is the Haredi young individual in the IDF today. And that's not by any means exclusive, meaning, of course, that there are others too. But that's the general profile. And for them, the IDF is a lifesaver. The IDF picks them up. They begin to become functional. They begin to get up every day early. They begin to achieve stuff. Some of them do officers' courses and become officers. It brings them to life in terms of their personal achievements. These are guys that have dropped out of every Haredi institutions. They feel like failures. And all of a sudden in the IDF, they have an opportunity to thrive, to succeed. And the army, there are problems. Let me put it on the table. It's not simple. A lot of some certain positions in the IDF are traditionally filled by women, by girls. And then how do you have that within a Haredi unit? So you have to find men instead of women. It's complicated. The whole issue of davenings, of learning time, of allowing civilian organizations like Netzach Yehuda predominantly to have access to these bases, to bring in Rabbanim, to give support, psychological support, social workers. A lot of these kids are lone soldiers because they don't have family support. So it's a complicated story with these guys, and the army is very important for them. A lot of them actually, thrive during their service and come out much stronger than they came in. However, if we want to speak about your type of guys who are coming in from the more elite side or from the stronger side of those Haredi youth, then we're talking about a different type of unit in the IDF that doesn't exist right now. We have these Shlav Bet programs, which are amazing. I gave Shiurim at a few of these programs, and they're wonderful. And the people serving there are your straight Haredim, mainstream, Rashi, Yeshiva, Ramim, Bnei Brak, Yerushalayim, Kiryat Sefer, you name it. If we want to speak about the youth, then we need to rethink how the army is going to mold, how the army is going to allow access to those types of Haredi individuals. It hasn't yet been devised. We're not there yet. It's going to be a work in progress. This isn't born in a day, because there's a lot of baggage coming in. And over the last 3 months, because of everything that's happened since October 7th, since Simchas Torah, so that's created a lot of momentum. It's created a different way of thinking. Like Rav Simchon said, people are looking at this differently. People are seeing the amazing sacrifice of these Frum soldiers, these mainly Datilumi soldiers, but unbelievable strength, fortitude, resilience, courage, and all of it within a framing of Torah, of mitzvahs, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's amazing. And that creates a different kind of mindset. And you have all these Shlav Bet people who are coming back to their Haredi neighborhoods in uniform and saying, hey, we can do it. So that's creating a certain momentum. But till that trickles down to the young guys who are making a huge decision, this is life-changing. They're going to be doing 3 years of army service instead of being in their Haredi institution, even if they're not learning full-time, but they're still in the Haredi fold. They're going out to do army. That's a big deal. And that requires infrastructure, thinking, devising. The Haredi battalion needs to be reformed in a way that it's not just a dropout kid, but rather it's a selection of right now, the strongest in Netzach Yehuda are the Datilumi guys, the Beinishim, Bnei Shivot, Datilumi guys, who are really the cream. They're coming, they're holding it up, they're doing the minyanim, they're learning everything. Till we get the Haredim who are like that, is really a work in progress. We're not there yet.
Yeah, I would imagine that the Rabbonim, the Rosh Yeshivas, etc., are probably fine with these quote-unquote dropout kids. I hate to use that term exactly, but with that, with them participating, I mean, because this is basically you're describing a rehab of sorts that's just a more productive and contributive kind of operation. But when we're talking about mainstream, I'm not even talking about elite or super strong, but just mainstream masses, that's a whole different story. And I'm curious, Rev. Simchon, if you have seen, from what you've seen in the army, would it be conducive, would it be possible for people that are coming from a stronger place? Are the possibilities there? Is the infrastructure there on some level for them to come in? And are you seeing the impact of people like yourself, the Shlav Bet, or the stories that Rabbi Pfeffer is talking about that people see all over the, whether you have a smartphone or no smartphone, you see all the stories from the people, learning Daf Yomi by the tank. And these are these images are coming into people's minds, into the consciousness. Do you think that's going to start making a difference on the average mainstream Haredi young man?
Well, I can say from my experience, the amount of people that's stopping me on the way when I'm on uniform, and they ask me, how can I do the same? How can I be in the army to do the same? But, you know, it's very hard. But how did you do it? What with the family? You haven't got brothers and sisters. You have got children that will need shidduchim. And you're not scared from all the influence of that.
And these are people in Bnei Brak? Main, are these people in Bnei Brak? Where
that's
are these people?
People from Bnei Brak, Beit Shemesh, Yerushalayim.
Mainstream.
That's mainstream Haredi. If you go to Netanya, where I live, it's much softer. It's much softer because people understand and they see around that we are in a war. I mean, one of my hardest part of this war is to go into Bnei Brak on Thursday night buying chulent for Shabbos and for Lel Shishi. And you see Olam Kemenago Noheg. You don't feel that it's in a war. You don't feel that something is going on. It was very hard. But I'm meeting Bochrim from Yeshivas, young Bochrim. And I think that the main problem in the Haredi group today, that's we are not really sure what is the setting, the hagdara of Torato Umanuto. If in my age, Torato Umanuto was a bocher that sat and learned morning Seder and afternoon Seder and evening Seder. Today, if you learn two Sdorim, it's enough. You are a yeshiva bocher. And something went wrong. Something went wrong. Of course, there are bochim that sit and learn the whole day. And to put it on the table, whoever sits and learns, that is the main important part for us as a Jewish believers, as a Jewish keeping mitzvot and Torah. That is the main choshuva thing that a person should do in life. Sit and learn. But once you are not sitting and learning, you should know that there are opportunities that you can be a part of Am Yisrael and part of the shlichut of Am Yisrael. And not because you came from a frum family, you get automatic ptor from serving Am Yisrael, being part of the community. And I think since the October 7th, even the Bochrim understand that. It's the change will come, what I feel, the change will come from the Bochrim. It will not come from the Rabbonim, I'm afraid, but it will come from the Bochrim. And I can see in my children's yeshivas, and in the Bochrim I'm taking, usually tramping from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak and Bnei Brak to Yerushalayim, they understand that something needs to be changed. I want to be part of this change. I want to be part of this example to these people, to this Bochrim, that you can still be Shomer Torah Mitzvot, you can still daven three times a day, and you can still sit and learn, and you can still give shiurim, and still be in the army. And it's not a contradiction. You can do them both. And I think that's what Rav Yoshua talked about. That's the communication with the Netzach Yehuda and the army. And the more that the army will understand that the army also needs to do a step towards these communities.
And it's trying. And it's trying.
So I was going to ask, have you met the people that are trying to do this? And how are they? What are they trying to do? How are they trying? Who is trying?
Right. So of course, the army is trying. The army in the beginning didn't understand that this is a unique moment in terms of the potential for Haredi participation in the IDF. There were many, again, older, we're not talking about 18-year-olds, there were many older Haredim who wrote in, sent emails and said, we want to sign up. And the army said, you know, what am I going to do with all these guys? You know, it's not interesting for us. But then there were a number of civilian organizations, mainly Netzach Yehuda, of course, alongside some other partners, who said, you know, guys, you have to do something here. This is big time. This is very significant. And if you don't find a space for these guys going to the IDF, then we're going to lose out on a real opportunity for new momentum that we've never had before. And the army woke up, and now they've appointed somebody new, a general in the IDF, to be in charge of the whole issue of Haredi participating in the IDF. He's started working very thoroughly. I hope that he'll come up with decent results. And the things that can be done are on multiple levels. First of all, what kind of units are Haredim going to be able to serve in the IDF? So there are ideas of developing the home front. There are ideas of developing Netzach Yehuda, which is a battalion. We can make that into a brigade and be able to take many more. Once it's a brigade, it's also much more independent. It's much more its own thing. And then it can take in much more and also have a greater independence in terms of the lifestyle, in terms of the educational ethos, in terms of the commander and the commandering structure. There's a lot that can be done in that sense. There's a lot of PR work that can be done, much more positive than was done before. Before, there was almost nothing being done, relying on all kinds of, Haredi Askanim kind of, this kind of...
shadowy.
If you want. Yeah. It's kind of shadowy because within Haredi society, they were often very much ostracized, these guys, and therefore it was all in the shadows and very much working with kids that dropped out. Listen, Reb Aaron Liebsteinman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he was the one, you said rabbis won't care about this. Well, they do. It's not so simple. Anything relating to the army and Haredi society is perceived as a threat by the rabbinic establishment, and because, where might this lead to? Reb Aaron Lieb said, no, we need this. We need to have this channel. And this channel that began with, kids who were more, as you said, kids who had fallen by the wayside, that channel can definitely be expanded to kids who are, not dropout kids, but kids who are not learning and they really are not fulfilling themselves. They can fulfill themselves in a deep way. And that depends a lot on what Rav Simchon is saying, the connection, the feeling of identification, the feeling that we're in this together. And if we can build that feeling, that's not the army's responsibility, that's our responsibility to make sure that we develop that sense of camaraderie, that sense of shared purpose, that sense of shared destiny, that we're in this together. And there's no time like the present, like a time of war, like a time when we sense how without being together, we don't have a future here. There's no time like that than to, no better time than that to develop this sense of how we need to be able to pool those resources together. The stories of small and technologically advanced armies, that's history.
Yeah.
This is not an issue of equality. It's an issue of a real need of guys in the army to serve as soldiers in the IDF. It's a clear and urgent need. And therefore, I think there's much more scope now. But how exactly it's going to proceed, what the pace of process is, the pace of progress is going to be like, and to which degree will the army be able to get its act together? The army is a big dinosaur, a lot of bureaucracy. It's not simple. So they're trying hard, and God willing, we'll be able to reach efficient and good effects. Good
progress. Rabbi Chaim, as it stands today, the way the army is structured today, would you feel comfortable advising a young person, not 18, let's say 20, 21, 22. A good student, not somebody learning 18 hours a day and not somebody who's smoking on the streets all day. An average guy. Would you feel comfortable recommending, advising them to go to the army the way it's structured today?
Of course, yes. Without no thinking, of course, yes. Because I think that the army, even that's, if we will give... Well, I'm doing with some education in my life, and I saw the amount of youngest in the Haredi community that are going out of this Haredi community and doing nothing, and they haven't got life, not before and not after. I mean, not before 18 and not after 18, and they're not managing to build a normal house because they never learned how to be mechuyav, to obligate to something. Nothing. And the army, even that if it will not bring gdolei Torah and gdolei shomrei mitzvot, but he will bring to the world human being, a person that will have the opportunities, will have the abilities to build a normal house. It will be kovei itim la Torah, and maybe not, but he will be normal. He will have a normal life, and he can have normal children and will not go into crime and not go to prison. But I want to tell you another thing. my father-in-law is not a Zionist. He's even anti-Zionist. He's not in Israel. But since the beginning of this war, he was calling me at least once a week just to see where am I, what am I doing, how we are, how we keep, how the boys, how the soldiers. And it was really, and I felt that something changed. The world understand that something is going on. And if we, the Jewish people all around the world, it doesn't matter if you are Satmar, you are Sephardi, you are Litvish, whatever you are, if you will not feel that we are all together and to fight for our survival, we haven't got a future.
Rabbi Shu, I want to ask you, because Rabbi Simchon mentioned something before about, you know, the absolute best madriga, the highest ideal, someone who can do that, sitting and learning, Torah umnaso, that level of total learning. I want to just interrogate that for a moment. Do you believe that is historically consistent position? Is that a more modern convention, that notion that pure Torah learning, you know, authentic Torah learning for a student who could do that, that should be their exclusive purview in life? Or, you know, do we look at other, you know, other traditions perhaps in our Masorah that would say, you know, even if you could potentially be learning all the time, but that's when you have the ability to learn, but you have other responsibilities, whether it's working, whether it's serving the country, etc. So then those should supersede even Torah learning. Where did this, I'm asking you both a historical and almost an anthropological question and a religious theological question. So I know it's a lot all in one, but that's why we pay you the big bucks. You know, where does this notion come from, and how attached to it is it to what you would consider an authentic Masorah?
Well, as you've presented, it's not a simple question. Don't forget that the idea of a Jewish army service is also a very modern situation, a very modern issue that we didn't have to handle in the past. And you're right, the idea of the Torah Umnaso in the sense that we have it today is also relatively new. However, there is a strong tradition, right? The Rambam famously writes that any Talmud Chacham that gets paid or gets funded by the community for his Torah, so the Rambam says, Kipa Ma'or Adas and Chilal Es Hashem, and says very, very strong things. And he caused all of the Rishonim to, not all, but many of the Rishonim, the Tashbats, and after that the Beis Yosef, and then many Acharonim, I would say, to get up and say, no, that's not what we do. Because if we don't have full-time Torah scholars, we're not going to have those great Torah leaders. We're not going to have those great Talmidei Chachamim. And I think that's become a staple of the Haredi mindset. We can discuss that, and I think it's worthy of discussion. But I don't think it's very practical or necessarily a very useful point of discussion, because we have to accept the basic assumptions of Haredi society. That is an assumption of Haredi society. Perhaps it'll change over time. Perhaps it'll become softer over time. But that is the basic assumption. It's a Reb Chaim Volozhin oriented assumption. This is what maintains the world. Torah study is the highest calling, the highest value. And those who are capable of studying full-time Torah study, we don't want to disturb them from their studies. We should allow them to engage and to become the Talmidei Chachamim that they can become again. It's arguable, we can speak about it, but I don't think it's necessarily the relevant point, because there are so many thousands of Haredi boys who are not in that bracket. We should be speaking about them. That's the relevant issue in terms of army integration, in terms of participation in the IDF. And you know what? I think that today it's not just a matter of, hey, equality and so on. It's also the army needs Haredim, not just in terms of manpower, but I think in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in terms of bringing in people who have a real connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need as many of them as we can in the IDF. We need an army of Tzva Hashem. We need fighters like the amazing, incredible, beautiful young Jews who tragically met their deaths. But I don't know, tragically, some people would take offense for the word tragically, because they died defending their country. You know, it's a personal tragedy, but it's amazing to see their resolve and their courage and their connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what a strong army needs. A strong Jewish army needs those boys. And I think more than ever, it's clear that the army needs the Haredim to be in. And there's so many to speak about. Before we get to your very delicate and for a different discussion, yeah. How do we look at the balance between working and between learning and between doing other things, combining? How do we look at that? So we know there are different opinions and different traditions in this, but that's not the salient point for this discussion. For this discussion, there's so many that could be in the IDF without hitting that particular delicate point.
Right, and I guess once you would hit, at some point you would have a tipping point where enough people would be doing this, you know, would be participating in society in the army service, that eventually that would also probably shift. You know, I guess very often the ideology follows practice,
the reality. Not the other way around. Yeah. Well, like Rav Simchon said, it's a question of, is this legitimate? Is this something that we can do without paying too high a social cost? And that's the tipping point, which is crucial for this issue. Right now, a young guy thinking of army service will think about the price that he's going to pay. And right now, it might be a high price. And he would need to have an ideological energy to think, wow, this is the right thing for me. I should be doing this. And that's not easy to find those guys. But ultimately, we need enough people doing it so that there won't be a high social cost for doing the right thing for these individuals, which is serving in the IDF. And that will allow this, you know, culture, this entire, you know, societal shift to develop and to take place.
And perhaps also, as you said, from a PR perspective, the ability to communicate, not just the, well, you're not doing anything else, so you might as well, but the positive benefits of, you can develop a sense of accountability. You can learn practical life skills, whether that's computer, you know, cybersecurity, or, you know, whatever.
And you can fulfill a religious duty, yeah, of serving your nation, serving the Jewish people in the most profound way. I mean, this is a religious duty. We have a magazine called Hamakom. Every month, we do a profile of an army graduate, an army veteran, Haredi army veteran. Look at where he's got to. Look at what he's achieved. Look what he's doing now. We need those role models. We need that to be prominent in the Haredi space for others to be able to follow that model.
Maybe just to close, can you share a story of something that you've experienced in the army, maybe a touching moment, a meaningful connection, either that you've seen with other Haredim that you've been around, some of the Rosh Yeshiva or things like this, or maybe in a connection between a Haredi and non-Haredi person, Chilini person, Dati person, and what you've observed in your short time there in training or in Shura?
It's hard to take just one moment. I could have talked about the role of the Tzanchanim, Chativat Tzanchanim, that did a brilliant job. Itamar Siani, he did a really big Kiddush Hashem by sending his soldiers into Gaza and being together with them inside and out.
The Rav himself was in Gaza?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a yeah, rabbi who did Shlav Bet?
He did Netzach Yehuda. He was one of the first.
He's a Haredi rabbi.
He's a Haredi rabbi, a very successful rabbi in his deed in the army, really appreciated by the army and appreciated by his soldiers. And
he went into
really
Gaza.
Warm the heart to see the connection between a rabbi and the soldiers. It's really warm.
Who are not all from soldiers.
No.
Not at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. But I can say that last week, one of my visitors in the marriage of my son was one of the commanders of the unit. And he's not Haredi. He's not full mature. And he came. He said that it was very hard day. It was the day of the worst day since the beginning of the war.
21 soldiers were killed in that day. Yeah. It was a terrible day.
And he said that I still left everything and I came to your celebration. You know why? Because you bought, as a Haredi, you bought to our unit something that I never saw before. You put yourself into danger because you understand that if you will not do it, it maybe not will not be done. And I saw the sacrificing of you, not in the front, not in the Chazit, not in Gaza, but being here in Shura and doing what you're doing, I don't think that no one in the army outside in Gaza or outside Gaza had this experience. And to
Rabbi, you should know the Shura people are absolute heroes.
It's unbelievable. Absolute,
but also the people that were in the field in the Gaza envelope, meaning the army rabbinate and the Zaka people, right. But the in Shura, unbelievable. These are true heroes, and Rav Simchan is one of them, just a true hero.
Well, I think I did why was needed to do, and that was my shlichut to be as a person in this place. But from someone outside that saw how we behave, it was such a kiddush Hashem. And I think that I'm not special in that. I think that if you will be more Haredim, they will all do the same. And I think that is something that we need more and more, because one shagrir, one ambassador of this behavior, and another one in another place, and another one in another unit, will make a big light and make a big change in the Israeli community, in the Israeli society. And it's something that we owe to our generation. And we owe that to our kids, to our children, for a better world, for Hayom Shacharei, the day after the war. We need to be here more together and more unite. The Israeli community. And I think that's when we saw it, it's another part that no one is talking about, but to go into Shura and to see the wall with the letters of greeting from all around the world. I got a letter from Eitan from Australia, and I got a letter from another one from South Shields in England, and from different places that please be strong. It's no words. That's we are the shlichim, wherever we are, for the Jewish community in the world. But we need to know that in the end of the day, we are all one. And I feel that when I have a friend in Australia, and when I have in Vancouver and wherever in the world, that will send me a greeting card.
And my father-in-law.
And to get these cards, it's warm the heart, and to see the mishlachot, the people that come from around the world, just to see what these Jewish soldiers doing here in Israel, it's amazing.
What a beautiful way to end. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Simchon and Rabbi Yehoshua Pfeffer, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ari. Good
stuff. Thank you. Thank you for visiting.